Welcome back to the Norfolk Currents Podcast. We're here today at the Barry Art Museum with Charlotte Potter Kasich, the Executive Director. Charlotte, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be here.
We're here today surrounded by an incredible selection of artwork at the Barry Art Museum, which is probably Norfolk's newest museum. Is that fair to say?
I think it is. We opened our doors to the public in November of 2018, so we just celebrated our five-year anniversary.
Yeah, and in those 5 years, you guys have been making a lot of headlines for events and some of your different exhibitions. Is there a focus of the gallery?
Yeah, there is. So our museum founders, Carolyn and Dick Barry, had three primary areas of collecting. Glass, which is my specialty, which we're standing near here, is the first area. The second is American modernist paintings and maritime paintings. And the third, which is probably the curveball for a lot of people, is historic dolls and automata. So those are our three major collections, and we do a variety of different exhibitions that sort of help unpack those subject matters for the public.
Got it. And so the Barry family and ODU have come together to kind of start the Barry Art Museum. What was the intention of adding another museum to the city?
That's a great question. So the Barrys had long been involved with Old Dominion University. Dick Barry had been on the board. And actually, little known fact, Carolyn Barry used to teach math classes at night while raising small children right here in Largemont.
Wow.
So they both had always been involved in ODU. They're from the area. They're both Norfolk born and raised. So when they were thinking about where their collection would make the largest impact, they felt like the student body here would be a really great candidate for that. They also recognized that a lot of the pieces that we have in our collection here might duplicate things that are in places like the Chrysler Museum. Mm-hmm. So by creating their own museum here, they're making it more accessible to the student body for study.
Awesome. And so what role does an art museum like this of such high caliber play for undergrad or graduate students at Old Dominion?
That's awesome. Great question. So we work a lot with the faculty in developing curriculum to make sure that it sort of interfaces with our collecting purview. One of the really exciting projects we've been working on is developing a Bachelor's of Fine Art with a concentration in glassblowing.
Cool.
So we partnered with the Chrysler Museum Glass Studio for that. So naturally, with all this glass around, that's something that those students really interface with a lot. Believe it or not, groups like the Fashion Merchandising Group really love our doll collection because it's a great example of merchandise, fashion, and culture all sort of coming together in that collection. And then, of course, the painting department absolutely loves our paintings. But we've had some really interesting partnerships across campus you might not think of naturally.
Okay.
For example, we've worked with the Kaplan Orchid Conservatory, for example, to do an orchid show.
Wow.
We're working right now with the Oceanography Department and the Institute for Coastal Adaptation and Resilience on a maritime exhibit. So the nice thing about being located here on a college campus is there's so many incredible researchers that we get to partner with when we are researching and thinking about the different exhibitions we'll put on display.
Yeah, that's really incredible. And your exhibitions so far, have there been any that are particularly notable to you or anything that is maybe your favorite exhibition in the first 5 years?
Oh gosh, that's so hard. It's like asking which child is your favorite child, Paul. That's a hard one. I will say, okay, so one of the first projects that I had the pleasure of and privilege of participating in when I came here was a show with Karen Lamont, who's a contemporary glass artist.
Okay.
She's American, but an expat that lives in Prague.
Okay.
And she's always just been like a real hero of mine personally as a maker and an artist as well, because my background is as a glass artist. And she makes these gorgeous busts of dresses. And COVID had just hit and we were like, oh gosh, how are we going to put together an exhibit? So we did a lecture with her and she said, you know, I just developed these really small, beautiful cast glass dresses that were inspired by these fashion dolls, post-war fashion dolls from France. And I was like, ding, ding, ding. We have dolls here. Maybe there's a connection between this incredible contemporary artist and our historic doll collection. So we dug a little deeper. We put together the funnest show where we exhibited all of her dresses on custom-made theatrical sets that were made by the ODU theater department.
Wow.
So it was so fun. We got to work with the theater department. We got to work with her. And I think the result was just really, truly stunning and really dramatic, I would say.
Yeah, that's really incredible. And you mentioned something that I think is really interesting is that you've got such a big history in glass art and even local glass art. You've been in Norfolk here and there for a while. What is this adding to the Norfolk glass community? And do you think that that glass community is growing because of what the Barry Art Museum is doing?
Gosh, I hope so. So yeah, when I first came here to Norfolk in 2011, I worked at the Chrysler Museum Glass Studio. I'm a glassmaker by trade. And it was so fun to help build that institution from nothing, from a you know, a bank
yeah.
into a glass studio. We did performance nights. It was amazing. They still have these programs going today. I think what the Barry Art Museum brings is between the Barry Art Museum, the Chrysler Museum of Art, and Glass Light Hotel. They tell me that we have the largest free glass collection in the world.
Wow.
And I don't think that people really realize that,
yeah.
you know? And I always think that there's some really interesting historical echoes. When I think back to this region, you know, this is one of the first places that was colonized. Let's talk about our first export. It was glass from Jamestown.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
So if you think about it, it makes complete sense. You know, they were looking for resources. There was a ton of wood. There was a lot of sand.
Yep.
You could burn the wood. You could melt the sand. So one of England's first apparently genius ideas was to send a bunch of glass blowers over and try to get them to learn how to melt the stuff down and ship glass back to England. It was logistically a terrible idea. It's a really complicated method. It's yeah. hard. It didn't go well. As we know, most people died in Jamestown, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
So I don't know that it was the first American success story.
Right.
But I love thinking about how glass is so deeply entrenched here in our culture and in our history.
Yeah, that's really incredible. That's, you know, 400 years of glass history kind of kicking off here. So the Barry Art Museum, kind of on the back of all that history, is now also announced an expansion that you guys are going past your kind of current build out and doing a lot more. Can you tell us more about what that's going to look like?
Yeah, absolutely. So the Barry Art Museum is really excited to announce this new expansion. We're going to be doing three stories right out here towards McDonald's.
Yeah.
It's just the easiest landmark to gesture towards. But what it's going to allow us to do is double our gallery space.
Wow.
Which is huge. We just accepted a large collection of glass from the Wayne Foundation. And so we've outgrown our current facility. Therefore, we're going to sort of, if you build it, they will come, build out a larger space. This is kind of our last opportunity wow. to build out a bigger space. And I think it's happening at a really interesting time in the history here in Norfolk. As you know, the Chrysler Museum Glass Studio is also expanding mm-hmm. right now. And so I see a lot of exciting growth for us as a cultural destination.
Yeah, definitely. What do you think the industry around glass art could look like? Is it more production? Is it more tourism and, you know, experiences?
Yeah, that's like? Fascinating. I mean, this is now we're going into my personal preferences, but I would say no to production and yes to tourism.
Right.
Because I've always just been really interested in the experience mm-hmm. of glass making. The actual final object, to be completely honest, in terms of my own practice, has usually been the thing I'm the least enamored with.
Okay.
I'm fascinated on how it's created. I'm interested in the techniques that were used to create this vase behind you and the cane work. I'm interested in the like 80 plus years and lineage that Lino Tagliapetria had to be able to get to the masterful place that he is. The object to me is just a relic of all that experience and all that history. And so if it's just me, Charlotte Potter Kasich, answering this question, I would say I'm excited about all the learning opportunities, all these incredible resources around them. I'm interested in the philanthropy. So many incredible families that have decided to really help bolster us in this area to become this mecca. And I'm excited about attracting people to this area and talking more about these deep histories that we have here.
That's incredible. And so in the expansion, then there is glass art going to be in that as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. So the expansion will have spaces to build out our doll gallery. We haven't touched on that a lot, but I would say it's sort of the most unique component. And a lot of those dolls do have glass eyes,
yeah.
which is why Carolyn started collecting them, as she was fascinating with the glass eyes. So I love that medical connection because it's the same as like what the same prosthesis that ophthalmologists would use, for example.
Oh,
it's the same method. So I'm interested in the technique and the history there. So we'll have space for that. We'll have space, of course, for our permanent paintings as well as glass. And I'd say that in the expansion, the area I'm personally the most excited about is our third story changing gallery space because it has big wow. high ceilings and it could be a black box theater. It can be a place for events. It can be a place for performances. It can be a place for installations. So I sort of see that as our field of dreams.
Wow. Yeah, that sounds really exciting. What's the timeline on when that'll come to fruition and people will be able to actually visit it?
So, you know, construction timelines are always moving.
Of course,
so I'm
yeah.
hesitant to like say victory. This is when we're going to open our doors. But according to what people tell me, we will be able to open our doors in the spring of 2026.
Okay.
Yeah. yeah so not
too far away.
Yeah. We're supposed to break ground this fall.
Okay. Excellent.
Yeah.
And is that coming mostly from support from the Barry family or ODU or some other folks?
Both. Yeah. All of the above.
Okay.
So the Barrys are very much involved. the Leah and Richard Waitzer Foundation, okay. which are the people who were the mentors of the Barrys and just granted us 165 glass objects, which has doubled our holdings in glass. They are major contributors. A lot of other local families, and of course, Old Dominion University. They are our biggest partners in this project. And thanks to them, we were able to just hire a full-time curator. Wow. Who starts January 10th, Sarah Woodbury. Up until then, it's really, we started out with a team of three, then we went to a team of four. Now we're at a team of five, and in January will be a team of six.
Wow. Well, with the track record you already have, I'm excited to see kind of what comes of that. I think one of the most notable things you all have done so far has been the kind of big outside public art displays, the moon and Mars. Can you tell us more about what those are?
Yeah, absolutely. So making contemporary and modern art accessible and interesting to the public has sort of been a battle cry of ours here. How do we make this interesting? How do we make it accessible? How do we make it something that people see themselves in reflected? So during COVID, when people did not want to be inside, we had the idea that we do an outdoor festival, and that was the moon. And it brought 10,000 people. People just loved it. And we realized, wow, we reached more people in 3 days than we did the entire year previously. I mean, partially because of the pandemic, but we realized it was a really important and relevant thing for us to do as an organization to showcase all of the remarkable research that happens here on campus. So after that success, we did Mars with the same artist, Luke Jerram, who's an incredible UK-based artist. And we partnered with NASA and so many different organizations across campus. I'm thinking about, you know, the astronomy groups. I'm thinking about the planetarium, but also like creative writing, who are writing science fiction pieces about what it could be like to live on Mars. So really fun partnerships across campus. And from there, we decided to go to Amanda Parer, which was this past year. And she was inspired by this very strange sort of cult classic film called Fantastic Planet. Have you ever watched it?
No, I haven't.
It's weird.
Okay.
It's like, you got to go to the narrow.
It's going on the list. Yeah, we'll check it out.
It's one of those like narrow piece ones. But essentially, it was the first stop motion animation from 1973. It was created in the Czech Republic. It was French. And it was this sci-fi strange video thinking about if humans were essentially the smaller race. So there's these huge humans that are much larger than us. And if we were just like little vermin, if we were just like, you know, the insects on the ground. And so it sort of flip-flops humanity a little bit and makes you think about what it would be like to have something so much bigger than you. So it gives you a lot of humility and a lot of humanity, and it sort of humbles you to stand underneath these huge figures, inflatable figures that were on the street. We had three of them. We had one sort of reaching over the top of the parking garage. We had another one, two out here in the street. And it was really fun to work with like the theater department so they could do performances around it, and the dance department and the Governor's School for the Arts, and really think about what it means to be small and humble about our place here on Earth.
That's really cool. And so it sounds like then there's going to be more public events and
well,
big
next year,
exhibitions.
Yeah. Do you want to hear?
Yeah, if we could. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So next year we're working with this group out of Providence, Rhode Island called Newhouse, PNEUHAUS. Okay. And they are a collaborative group of designers, architects, and sculptors.
Cool.
I actually went to school with these guys. They were undergrads when I was graduates, and they've been doing great work and really kind of rising stars in the field. We're doing three biomes. So we have one that's going to be all about underground and sort of thinking about caves and geometry and things like that. We have an aerospace one that's all about clouds in the sky. And then the final one is the forest floor, the canopy.
Okay.
So we have these bikes that you can ride, and it makes these trees open and close over your head. So it's really interactive and fun.
Yeah.
We're partnering with the Norfolk Botanical Gardens for that component
of course.
Of course, naturally. So what we've realized with these festivals is it's a great way to get people on campus, have this show and tell moment where suddenly people get to see different research across campus, and also get people to realize the shows that we have here. Like I said, we reach more people in those 3 days than we do the whole year combined, which is wild.
Yeah. Do you get a lot of folks coming through the museum on those big days as well to see all the other art that they might miss throughout the year?
Okay. Exactly. Yeah. I would say the majority of our current audience is student body and then our local community. But on those days, suddenly all these families that you wouldn't normally see are here.
Yeah.
And prospective students and alumni, all these, because it's usually around when there's alumni reunions and homecoming and things like that. So it's just a really fun celebration.
Yeah, I think there's probably still a lot of families who maybe didn't know you guys were here yet.
Didn't know that we're free.
Didn't know it was free, right.
And that we're open to the public.
Yeah.
So I think that that's one of the really forward-thinking components of what our founders did here. They wanted to create a free museum that's accessible for all. So it's free admission. Our programs are free. Everything is completely free.
Yeah.
The one thing we ask is that if people are bringing in large groups, that they just contact us ahead of time. So I'd lined up to help them wander through. But
yeah,
it's here for our community, and I hope that people know and think about using us in that way.
Absolutely. And what do you think are some of the big things that people will take away when they come through to visit?
Well, so we have four galleries currently. So I've noticed that people usually are here for about an hour.
Okay.
It doesn't have to be a huge stop. And I think that what they often do is start to see, well, for example, in this space, visual parallels that sort of transcend time and media. So you don't need to know anything about art to see that this glass piece sort of has this beautiful movement to it. And then this painting to the right also has a very similar movement to it.
Right.
So there's these really fun visual pairings that transcend media and time to think about patterns, colors, textures. And so that's one thing that we've noticed a lot of people pick up on.
Okay.
Another thing I would say is maybe a new interest in something that they weren't aware of before. For example, some people come here to see the dolls and suddenly they fall in love with the glass. Or some people come to see the maritime paintings and suddenly they realize they like American modernist paintings. So I think sort of stumbling upon maybe a new thing of interest is what people typically come across.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure some students and other creatives come here to maybe get out of the writing block or the creative doldrums and be inspired by new things. Do you think that's fair?
Yeah, I think it's fair. I've noticed that a lot of students like to come here and study, which is really great. They sort of bring their book in and they'll sit and they'll just look at things and read. And I like to think of us as a nice reprieve for students in that way.
Yeah.
We have a beautiful fountain in our lobby that like right now I'm hearing sort of bubbling. And I'll tell you, even on a personal level, like during COVID, I would just come here and sit and listen because it is sort of a meditative space. It's big and beautiful. Our space was designed by Burl Saunders, who's a local architect. And he made it sort of like a chapel, like a cathedral that you can come to. And, you know, it's not necessarily religious, but it can feel that way when you come into one of these spaces.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you guys are right here in the middle of ODU's campus on Hampton Boulevard, which is busy across from the our way, which is super busy. And it's so serene and peaceful in here.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like amongst all that hustle and bustle, there's sort of this place, this quiet place that you can come and reflect. We also have free parking right next door, which I feel like I want to mention because when I didn't work at ODU, I was terrified to come to campus because I was scared of parking. And I feel like just know that it's literally free parking right next door. It's not hard. It's right here for you.
Yeah, can vouch. I park there, you know. Yeah. But so your exhibit schedule seems to mirror a bit of the Old Dominion school year. Is that right?
Yeah, correct. So we typically have one large changing exhibit that opens in the spring.
Okay.
But we keep it on all the way through the fall semester because we have the large festival in the fall.
Yeah.
And we've noticed that it's not usually the same audience that come to those two events. So this spring, we're opening a show called Message in a Bottle. And it's a maritime show picturing maritime culture in Hampton Roads. I mean, we are one of the largest ports in the world. So it's going to be a really interesting then and now show. We're taking our permanent collection, Dick Barry. His father was in the Navy, and you know, he and Carolyn's first date was a boat ride. You know, big part of his life has always been maritime culture. So he collected these beautiful, sort of golden age of sail, classic Buttersworth paintings. And so we'll have those coupled with contemporary reflections about what does maritime culture look like now.
Right.
You know, we've got a huge shipping industry here. And so we think about consumerism. We think about the culture that goes around all of that. And we're featuring a lot of contemporary ODU faculty across campus that are making works that are relating to this subject matter. So I'm excited to reveal this. It's going to be a really interesting exhibit.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And then as you guys are looking for and curating new pieces to put in the Barry, how do you balance trying to bring in, you know, world-class art that you can't find here and also showcasing local folks maybe? Do you guys think about those two? And
I think about it all the time, Paul. That's a great question. So one of the things we always are trying to balance is we love to have the blue chip artists. We love to bring in these things that maybe might not already be here.
Yeah.
But we also want to showcase what's happening here. And there's some incredible talent right here in Norfolk in terms of makers and designers and fabricators. So a couple of names that come to mind that I'm really excited to exhibit in this maritime show is Peter Udenbach, who is a remarkable world-class sculptor, but happens to teach right here at ODU.
Wow.
John Roth, who's making these incredible miniature scenes that depict a lot of like little dioramas with maritime things in it. And Melissa Hill, who works in IT in the art department, and you wouldn't even know it, but has world-class art in like Google. Wow. And so one of the fun things to do is to sort of discover the talent that's already here. And I've even noticed with collectors in this area, like they'll travel to Paris to buy a piece of art, or they'll travel to New York to buy a piece of art.
Yeah.
And sometimes when they do that, they buy a piece of art of somebody who's from here. So one of the things I'd like people to recognize is how much incredible talent is right here.
Yeah, and there's hopefully art for sale in their own backyard too.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. I mean, we are not a retail space,
right.
Nor do we sell anything. But I think it's a great way of showcasing what's here.
Yeah. You know, the Barry Art Museum and some of your past work have added so much to the art community in Norfolk and Hampton Roads. Is there anything that you feel like we're missing or we haven't quite got to yet that we could be looking to add?
I have a dream. I can tell it to you, but okay. We're not there yet.
Hey, we love dreams here.
Well, since we're on a campus, one of the things I'd love to do is to start a master's program again.
Okay.
There used to be a master's of fine art program here at ODU in partnership with Norfolk State. And I think right now in this area, we've been building these bridges. There's the Governor's School, I think, is one of the best art schools that you one could go to. Those students are phenomenal. So people go through there, and then they can go to TCC, and then they can go to ODU or Virginia Wesleyan. They can go to these different places. They can get their associate's degree. They can get their bachelor's degree.
Right.
But they don't stay here to get their master's degree, nor are we attracting some of the best talent to this region for masters. And I've found that once there's a master's program, people stay. They become embedded in the community. They start galleries. They keep making. So I would say that's the last piece of the ladder that I would like to see this region be able to build.
Yeah. Any particular concentrations you think that we need, or just a general MFA program?
Okay, I'm biased. Like, obviously, mm-hmm. I'm a little invested in the glass component of all of this. But I will say that I think it doesn't need to be glass. Sculpture, painting, 2D, graphic design, any of those will be hugely beneficial to our region.
And, you know, excuse my ignorance, but do you know where the like closest next MFA program is, or a glass specialty program?
VCU.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah. Yeah. Not that far, actually.
Yeah, not too far.
Just down the road.
Yeah.
Just down the road. But what they don't have... They don't have a neon program. There used to be a robust neon program right here with Ken Daly at ODU. He was here for 50 years. Neon's been a huge part of the industry here. And really, there's no MFA program with a strong neon program besides mm-hmm. Alfred. So there's certainly areas that we, I think, could inhabit that other spaces locally do not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are there any particular artists and locally that are exciting you that you, want to give a shout out to?
Well, okay, yes. It's a little far out there, but in August, we're doing our first Dollhouse Invitational.
Okay.
It's a weird sort of exquisite corpse surrealist game that we're playing, where we're giving each of the ODU faculty one room in a dollhouse that they have to design and create. And then all those rooms are coming together to create the exhibit.
Wow.
Heather Beardsley is an adjunct artist here. I'm excited to be working with on that. She's really been blowing up locally, and she's a Virginia Beach born and raised artist.
Cool.
So there's a fun name. Julia Rogers from the Barry Art Museum and Christy Todoritis will be in that show. A lot of up and coming rising stars. Ryan Lytle. It's going to be a great, great show. So those are some of the ones that I'm excited about.
Yeah, that sounds excellent. When you guys are booking shows, or maybe just in general, do you ever feel some friendly competitiveness with the Chrysler or the Perry Gallery at the Glasslight?
Yeah, or Mocha. I put them all in there. What I try to do is, if they're doing a show with an artist, I won't do it.
Okay.
Give everybody their space. Let them, for example, there's been opportunities to show the same artist that might be doing a solo show at the Chrysler. And no, let's let them do the project that they're going to do at the Chrysler and do it well. And let's not spread the artist thin. And let's keep the audience going there for that one. I will tell you, there's a show that's opening in January that's a little bit different than what we've been discussing. It's a show about a woman named Martha Chase. And she was part of the progressive movement of Providence, like in the early 1900s. Think Industrial Revolution.
Okay.
It's dirty. There's a lot of child labor. Things are not going great. And she decided that she was going to start making these sanitation dolls that would help people learn how to basically stay clean and not get sick. And on the heels of the pandemic, it's easy to think about this kind of thing. But what her true like innovation was that Her husband was a doctor, as was her father, and she decided to make the first hospital doll. She did not make the first CPR doll, but think of it that way.
Okay.
The first doll for nursing students to understand how to put an IV port, how to do all these things that they needed to learn. Yeah. So we're doing a show about her and her legacy and this really wonderful kind of betwixt between art and medicine.
Yeah.
Which I think is coming at a really interesting time with the merger with EVMS.
Yeah.
So that just shows you like a totally different angle where suddenly we're able to have this show that's about dolls, but it's actually really about medicine and it's about global pandemics and it's about sanitation. Right. So it's sort of fascinating. I don't think I have to fight with the Chrysler or the Mocha for that show. I think we're unique in that way.
Yeah, that one sounds definitely very unique.
Yeah.
And particularly because you have such the large doll exhibit here. And, you know, you mentioned that those are great examples of pop culture at the time or fashion, but I didn't think about the medical tie-in. Are there other kind of roles that you see, you know, doll art playing in the, you know, I guess, lexicon of our history?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it's hard not to talk about Barbie right now. We are doing a Barbie show in 2025. But on a personal level, I didn't really realize that there was this interesting photography element. So we have probably one of the rarest dolls in our collection is it's called the Rochard doll. And it has this beautiful glass necklace. Peer into the necklace. Each one of those is a micro photograph.
Wow.
It was one of like this was a technology that was being used for like espionage at the time. You know, like spies were tying these to carrier pigeons and sending them over the border during the 1812 war. So it's really interesting to think about like the fact that this doll, which is really kind of a quirky piece of Victorian culture and also like a slightly perverted one, because you have to basically undo the woman's shirt to peer into her bosom to see said photographs.
So it's
a pseudo like a little bit of a peep show as well.
Right.
So, I mean, that just gives you an example of like the level of weird and wonderful and sort of quirky that you can find in the up there in that doll world.
Yeah.
another one that I think is really interesting is we did a show about automata, which are essentially like moving dolls, clockwork dolls that you can wind up. If you've seen Hugo, it's like that.
Okay.
But they basically were the precursor to modern day robots.
Oh, wow.
So we got to do this really fun show that was thinking about robotics, robotic inventions here at ODU, how they've been used in the medical industry and the military industry, and then how they got their humble start with dolls.
Yeah, that is really interesting.
Yeah.
You know, and you mentioned the Barbie exhibit coming up. You guys have one pretty notable or a few Barbies on display now.
We do. Yeah, we have a Barbie Bride, which was an original, one of the very first cast ones. I could get into some weird detail about casting and how like rubber colors differently over time, but ours is pristine. I'll just leave it at that. It's perfect. Her complexion is exactly what it was originally. I love thinking about Ruth Handler, the founder. She was fascinating. She was a dynamo female entrepreneur sort of before it was normal.
Right.
And she did some fascinating things with Barbie is a very divisive figure, I would say. And specifically like for the Barbie show, we're working with Women and Gender Studies department to sort of unpack her because there's a lot going, you know, I mean, there's body dysmorphia issues. But then there's also like professional role model icon components. So
right.
She can be a little bit of everything for everyone. And I'm excited about that Barbie show. I'm really excited about it.
Yeah, that's interesting. And did the Barbies that you all had here recently drive a lot of extra traffic with the whole, you know, Barbie craze?
Barbie
that
mania.
We've had? Yeah.
We had like slews of people coming in all dressed in pink to go like make a pilgrimage to go see our original Barbies on display. So we invite them all. Yeah. Bring it on.
It's awesome.
Our entire workforce and our gallery host program are students. They're paid students. We also have student internships and then we have graduate assistants. So it's interesting. Our team here is a really beautiful blend of museum professionals, artists in their own right. We have a number of artists on our team, gardeners, graphic designers, and students from across all of campus, everything from, you know, science and medicine to graphic design and jewelry. So I think what's kind of fun about this place is that we're a little bit of everything and our team is really created by the student body.
Wow. Yeah, that's really great. And I'm sure then you see a lot of, I guess, changeover and new faces on your team as folks graduate.
Every semester.
Yeah, right.
You see like the new kids on the block, which is great.
And so does that mean that you feel like your team energy changes or that there's maybe something different brought to the museum by, you know, new talent and new, you know, folks?
I think what's great is that it allows us to remain humble, nimble, and always sort of changing with what the student body needs and wants. We do have some good continuity. Some students come to us their sophomore year and stay through their senior year.
Okay.
Some even, you know, we get their junior year and then end up getting their master's here, so they stay for an even longer period of time. But you're right, there is a constant influx of new energy, which I think just makes us have our finger on the pulse a little bit more.
Yeah, that's excellent. And for those folks who, you know, maybe they're a student or maybe they're just somebody else who wants to support what you guys are doing, what's the right way for them to get involved or to help you guys out?
Oh, thanks, Paul. That's a very thoughtful question. Membership, you know, because we're a free institution, the only way that people support is through giving and membership. And so, yeah, get on our website, check out our membership models. They're very, it's free for students, first of all.
Yep.
$15 for non-ODU students. It goes up from there. But yeah, think about that, or even maybe sponsoring one of the exhibits that you're really invested in, because that's the best way to be involved.
And being a member, does that come with any notable perks?
Oh, of course. Yeah. Membership involves special VIP events, which I think is my favorite part of this, especially for the festival. We always have like a pre-party.
Cool.
And then every time there's a publication, they get one of those. So there's some great membership perks. And it makes you feel like closer to our community right here and more involved with the museum itself.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, I'm definitely excited to get over here a lot more as the new exhibits come online. And I'm looking forward to the expansion and everything else. Thanks for taking the time, and we'll see you soon.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks so much for coming in. We'll have you guys in here again sometime soon as well.
All right, thanks.
All right, thank you.